Coming up on the latest edition of Serie Awesome, Milan bounced back from defeat to beat Torino and stay top of the Serie A table. We look at how Inter and Juve shape up ahead of this weekend's massive Derby d'Italia. We'll also check in on their latest games, including Inter's draw with Roma and whether the Nerazzurri let 3 points slide. Elsewhere, Napoli left it late, Ilicic shone for Atalanta, Fiorentina got their first home win, and Lazio met with the Pope ahead of the Derby della Capitale. Hello and welcome in. I am Matteo Bonetti. Kay is on the subs bench, and I am joined by both Mina Rizzucchi and Nikki Bandini. First up, we'll look back on the big game and what the weekend's results all mean. So the big game, of course, Roma against Inter finished 2-2. The draw meant that Inter kept hold of second place and maintained a little distance from Roma, who would have gone level on points if they've won. So let's start with the first question. I want to talk about Antonio Conte's substitutions. Once again, all the rage. Is it a case of 3 points sliding because of those second half changes that Conte made, Nikki?
You know, there was a point when I was watching this game and I was getting quite frustrated with Paulo Fonseca for not making any changes. I was looking at the subs bench and thinking, Borja Mayoral scored 2 goals 3 days ago. Why is he not coming off the bench? You're losing this game. You've got Carles Perez there. And where's this change coming from? And then Antonio Conte went and made the change for Roma by bringing on Alexander Kolarov, a former Roma player. Not in the end that it was Kolarov's fault, actually, for what went wrong. I did find the changes quite passive, though. I think bringing off Lautaro Martinez, I understand. Look, I can take each of these decisions individually and understand Conte's feeling on it. Lautaro Martinez has played third game in a week. Same, I think, for Hakimi. They've played a lot of minutes. You think you need to do something to lighten the load on those legs. But I think taking both of those players in particular off and replacing them with something more defensive, ultimately, and in Kolarov's case, I know he wasn't at fault, but God, he hasn't been good even defensively this season. You really took away all of the counter-attacking potential in that team. And I think that was what was critical, because up to that point in the second half, Inter had been really good. Inter, frankly, in the second half of that game on Sunday, I thought they wiped the floor with Roma. They raised some pretty big questions for me about Roma and the potential that we talked about to get involved in this title conversation. But once you took off those players, the passivity of it, the willingness to sort of say, all right, we're done for the game. All we need to do is hold out. I thought it was asking for trouble. And I think it was especially asking for trouble on a team. And I keep hammering this point, you guys, that is not good at defending. Inter are the top scorers in Serie A. They have something going for them, but it's not at the back. And there was something terribly, terribly predictable about giving up that goal at the end, having made those changes and having said, all right, well, we're sort of not really trying to score anymore and we think we can dig in where we are.
Yeah, and Antonio Conte was actually asked about these substitutions, and what I found kind of refreshing was that he didn't offer any excuses. He actually gave a tactical reason why he made the changes that he did. He said, Vidal got injured and Gagliardini replaced him. Lautaro gave so much in 75 minutes. I wanted to help the team in the defensive phase. And Hakimi ran so much. He was losing ball possession too frequently. We played 3 games in a week, and those players have always played, and we have substitutions we can use. He also went on to say Arturo Vidal had a good game. Of course, Vidal and Kolarov, two of the players that Antonio Conte wanted because of that experience. But Mina, is it the experience that they're offering? I have a feeling that you might disagree on this a bit.
I think what I really disagree with is Gazzetta's rating on Vidal, saying that he's sort of going back to the levels that we know of him. Like, what? Listen, it's really strange, because obviously when the substitutions were happening, I understood the logic behind them, and I thought that Antonio Conte explained them very well. When you look at it in the grand scheme of things and the fact that it allowed Roma to obviously get back and they were really falling apart, so it would have been a great opportunity to press on the accelerator and finish them. And one other thing that I am referring to Gazzetta a lot is that they compared this match to the one that Atalanta had against Roma. And what Atalanta did at the time was take off Zapata and introduce Muriel. And obviously, you know what happens when Muriel comes on. He's basically Bernardeschi, but with goals and impact. And so he managed to obviously annihilate Roma. And this is what we're seeing a little bit too often from Roma. They fall apart too easily, and there needs to be questions asked about why this is happening. And, you know, they are being asked about this. Bringing on Kolarov, other than the fact that this is almost not just nostalgia because he's playing against his old team, I don't know whether he thought that this would be something interesting. I really don't know. Like I said, I do understand the logic behind it, but Conte is a former Juventus player, and he's always going to err on the side of caution because in his nature, he is defensive. In his nature, he wants to protect. Unfortunately, he doesn't have a team that understands how to defend very well at the moment, or at least in the compact ways that we know of him and we've seen of him in his previous jobs at Chelsea and, of course, at Juventus. It just, you know, it's like Nicky said, they're really bad at the back. So don't take a punt there. Try to score another goal. This is where he needs to change his thinking. When you look at Gasperini always just wants to score another goal, get seven, get eight. I don't personally like having to, you know, outscore the opponent by that much, but whatever, I'm old school, right? It's just about changing that method of thinking. So it's not always about let's, you know, score more at the start of the game. It's more like if the opponent is dying, let's kill them. And that's something that needs to be done.
Well, if you want more goals from Inter, Mina, I think Christian Eriksen starting might give you just that. There's been recent reports now that Antonio Conte is finally ready to try Christian Eriksen, who's hardly been able to get off the bench. When we have seen him, it's been in the 90th minute. It's almost looked disrespectful, but potentially a new regista role, deep-lying playmaker role for Christian Eriksen. It feels like it was only a few months ago that Conte said that Eriksen can't play further back. So why the change now? Is it a case that they're trying to salvage Christian Eriksen when they've realized that because of his salary, it's hard to offload him, and they're saying, right, we have to find a way to make it work?
It's funny because I feel like you're just trying to provoke me into just losing my mind.
I am. That is correct.
And I'm trying really hard not to do this. Okay, Matteo. But it was so bizarre that you came out in November and when asked about whether or not that he can play the regista role, you said, no, and I quote in Italian, no, assolutamente no, yeah, which is no, absolutely not, because
exactly.
It would penalize him of the very skills that he's good at. So, I mean, I just think, wow, the stuff that you're saying and the stuff you do. I mean, it's just, you know, but anyway, trying to put this all aside so that I don't explode on this podcast and maintain a level of professionalism. I do think it is a question of he can't buy any players, thinks to himself, well, let me try to see what I can do. But just before we go into that, did you guys not see what Paulo Fonseca said? And I just thought it was really funny before the game in which he said, we all know the way that Antonio Conte teams play. It's just not easy to stop. Does that not just be like, this is also predictable. If we were strong, we'd know how to stop it. Like, did no one take this on board?
But in many ways, I think that is, I don't think any of us would disagree with that. Conte's teams are not unpredictable. When they play well, they are very hard to stop. And again, in the second half of this game, I thought Inter played some really, really good football. I think the stubborn-headedness of Antonio Conte is going to continue to grate forever for anyone who wants to see some diversity. I mean, we were talking about the substitutions a second ago. And even if you agree, and I can get on board with the idea that the guys coming off were tired, let's acknowledge, by the way, quickly that Lautaro at least looked pretty shocked when the board came up with his number. So how tired they were, I don't know. I'm sure a lot of minutes, but players sometimes can push through that when they feel like the occasion demands it. But you had options to still have a team that could play counter-attacking football. I think Stefan Asensi, who came and played a half against Crotone, why is he still not getting minutes? If he's not fit, then why is he there? And can we have some more clarity on that? Because exactly the sort of player who could break lines and do something for you. I do think, to sort of tie into that one last thing, we talk about press conferences. Both of these managers before the game were talking explicitly about ambition, about this game as being a test of their ambition. And I feel like the way the game ended for me made me want to sort of shake them both and say, come on, if you have this ambition, if your ambition is to win this thing, it's a game you need to try and win. And perhaps Fonseca did in the end at 2-2 Ithuram on Perez, but I still would have liked to see more attacking changes from him as well as from Conte.
Can I just, you know what, I think you make some really good points over there. I do want clarification on what's going on with Sensi. What I do like so much about this game is that I thought they were both quite true to themselves. I think what makes Inter stand out from the other clubs, and what I do think is the weapon that they have, is their physicality. They are very good at bullying their way through. I disagree with you about what I think is clever football from them. I think what they have is clever players, so that comes through. I don't think the tactics are clever by any stretch of the imagination. But when you have good players, they are going to come up with moments of genius, I think, a lot of the time, whether it be Lukaku or Barella. Sensi would have made it even more unpredictable and fascinating to watch. I also like that Fonseca went with Villar. He wanted to play sort of a more dribbling, you know, interesting passing style of football. He wanted to stay true to his nature. In his way of doing that, he's trying to say, I believe in you guys playing this and imposing your football and still winning. And they did. They, using their quality, they managed to run the first half. Sadly, they cannot match that bullying physicality that Inter have in the second half. And they do keep falling away. That's something that they need to look at. But you're right. It was disappointing that Fonseca didn't try to introduce changes a little bit earlier. And in many ways, Conte did give him obviously a break by allowing him to sort of, you know, take the foot off the accelerator.
So let's talk about the Roma side of things. And Fonseca was quick to say that his team has failed to maintain an identity for a full 90 minutes. And you both mentioned it, that it was more in the second half, that 15-minute stretch where Inter mounted the comeback and looked like the bigger team. So let's just go over Roma's results so far this season against the big teams. They've had draws against Juve, Milan, and now Inter. But they've had two massive losses against both Napoli and Atalanta, where they shipped four goals in both of them. Is it fair to question Roma's results against the big teams in Serie A?
Yeah, absolutely, it's fair. I think it's something that needs to be looked at. I always criticize, I always tell you, I judge people by what they do in the big matches. I don't care if you manage wins against the likes of Crotone, Spezia. Having said that, Spezia is like God at the moment. You are judged by how you do against the big matches, and that does mean having to know how to control your energy so that it lasts the full 90 minutes, that you are always able to be unpredictable until the last moment, that you don't mentally collapse. This is one thing, again, that I don't like about Napoli either. It is about conceding a goal and continuing going. Now, Roma players say that we can't manage this for 90 minutes. Well, you're going to have to try, because I find it rather bizarre how much they fall and how far they fall in the second half. And that's something that really genuinely needs to be looked at, because I think Fonseca is trying to give them in many ways that mentality to constantly believe in themselves by, like I said, playing certain players to say we believe in our style. But I don't know whether he's doing enough on a mental level to get these guys to want this desperately the way that, let's say, Lazio did on the 90th minute last season when they would score about four goals in extra time.
Yeah, I don't know if I've got my finger on what's not quite there at Roma at the moment. Is it just a talent gap? I think if you had asked us at the start of the season, do Roma have the talent of a Juventus or an Inter? We probably would have said no. That said, we've mentioned Napoli and Atalanta giving them a tough time, and those are teams which you think they probably should be at least close to on a par with. I think there's all these sort of threads I want to draw out. I mean, there's a part of me that thinks, is this, because the tactics for me under Fonseca this season have moved much more towards what we saw at Shakhtar, much more sitting deep, compact, inviting teams onto you a little bit, and then playing on the counter, much less high press. Not none, there's been some high press, but I think the Napoli game was a really good example of a game where they didn't really go for that high press that we saw a lot of last season. And do you need to be less passive than that with this team in Serie A? Is that part of what's hurting you? But then they started this game well. I think there's something that's not quite at the level it needs to be. I slightly disagree. I do and I don't, actually, with Mina on the big games, because in the end, whoever's top after 38 games, I don't care how you got those points. You're top after 38 games. And I think there's a great example even from Juventus a couple of years ago when the big game of the season was their game against Sarri's Napoli at the end of the season, and Napoli won it. But then Napoli didn't go and beat Fiorentina a week later, and so Juventus won the title. So in the end, what matters is doing it over 38 games. But if you always drop points in the big games because you're giving points to your rivals as well, it becomes very hard to make that up just by bullying the bad teams.
I'm not sure if you both saw, but there was a statistic going around Twitter which was pretty interesting about Roma, that they're the first out of any team in the top five European leagues in big chances created. Now, I'm not sure how you quantify big chances, and I'm not usually one for statistics or expected goal tallies or whatever. I feel like in football, statistics matter less than in any other one of the major sports, but you don't need expected goals and big chance statistics to tell you that this Roma side is one that creates a lot of chances. It feels like Paulo Fonseca is unlocked, and okay, it doesn't last for full 90 minutes, but when it's free flowing and when it's at its best, I feel like Roma gets into the final third with such ease, and they create so many dangerous opportunities. Fonseca's gotten the best out of some key players like Henrik Mkhitaryan. We haven't really seen this version of Mkhitaryan since his days at Borussia Dortmund. Edin Dzeko still looking as solid as ever. Pedro was a decent investment in terms of IQ, a player that has those footballing smarts. And even in the midfield with the likes of Gonzalo Villar, I mean, that is quite a coup. A player that was in Elche in the Spanish second division, and he's now become one of the classiest midfielders in Serie A. I feel like Roma have a really good project here, and they really need to be considered for the Scudetto as a dark horse. I'm not sure if they're going to be able to keep it up, but I guess another indication we have comes this Friday, the Derby della Capitale. Fabio Capello says that Roma is the better prepared out of the two. How do you see this game playing out between Roma and Lazio?
I think that it's very difficult to speak about Roma, because when it comes to actual tactics and the way that they play the game, I think they're one of the very best. You know, they are so versatile. They can play all sorts of different football. They are unpredictable. They defend well. They attack well. I think what's missing there is that they're almost a soft centre, in much the same way that they're more of a Napoli side before. When I remember Roma, and you remember players like Nangolan and Strootman, and you felt like they were tougher back then, like that they had this mentality about them that was almost erring too much on the side of like, yeah, we're going to kill them, you know, whereas now it's a little bit so pretty, but not necessarily very malicious and effective when it comes to like trying to steal the game in the 90th minute. They lack that kind of hunger that I think is interesting, because their statistics, when you were talking about creating chances, Napoli actually had the most shots on goal in the all of Europe last week. And yet, where are they when it comes to scoring goals? So it's interesting that these two sides are similar in the sense that they are so beautiful going forward, but not necessarily as effective as they need to be or efficient. But when it comes to Lazio, now, when you look at their game over the weekend, it is that hunger. It is they look like they're coming back to that physical manner of controlling the games, of trying to find a way through. And even though their opponents played very good football, it was about trying to exploit their chances, what they can. They were, you know, opportunistic in nature. And so for me, I think it will be a beautiful first half from Roma, their collapse as we have seen so far, and then Lazio trying to win it in the 70th, 80th minute, and probably managing to do something special then because of their physicality.
I think we're definitely, I mean, this is a huge weekend, and I was saying this just before we started, I almost find this last week slightly hard to talk about, because for both Roma and Inter, it's like a partial judgment. You have these two games back to back, and if you're Roma and you draw with Inter and you beat Lazio, I think you've come away from those two big games with a very good result. If you're Inter and you draw with Roma away from home and you beat Juventus, you come away with a very good result. On the flip side of that, if Inter go and lose to Juventus this week coming up, then they've suddenly got 1 point from three games. And we're talking about a very familiar story with Inter and January slumps. And likewise, if Roma come away having already dropped points, as we've talked about, against big teams, lost to Napoli, lost to Atalanta, drew with Inter, if you now can't beat Lazio either, it does become quite a strong narrative for this first half of the season that you dropped points in all of those games. You didn't get any of them. I think that Mina's touched on it. The physicality is going to be a big part of this game. You think about Lazio, that is a team that can put some serious muscle in midfield. I mean, certainly Milinkovic-Savic is such an outlier in terms of his ability to use physicality and also close control. On the flip side of that, on paper, if Fonseca can do that slightly more Shakhtar-ish, that's not a word, but I'm going to make it one, Shakhtar-ish approach of just closing down the spaces, of letting Lazio have the ball at the back and say, find a way through this, I think that does take away something that Lazio do best. They are a team that likes to play on the counter. They are a team that wants to bring you onto them and find those spaces and exploit them. So it's going to be a really interesting game. And I think talking about managers who we think of as being more or less adept tactically, I've got really high regard for Simone Inzaghi. So it's a big test for him as well.
Yeah, and I think this is going to be end-to-end. And, you know, these are two teams, Nikki, as you mentioned, that Lazio, they're not going to go all-out attack. They're best on the counter when you have Luis Alberto and Milinkovic playing those balls forward to Ciro Immobile. And Roma, on the other hand, as well, they find a way to attack and get in between the lines, I think, almost better than anyone in Serie A when they're clicking. I think this has the potential to be one of the most entertaining games of the season.
Also, I just want to mention the fact that what I think is so good is that both of them used wing play very well. And so that's going to be interesting to see how that happens. And also with Lazio, you have so much quality as well through the middle as you get with Roma too. So I'm interested to see how that's going to play out, because a lot of the times you see a team that's either really good through the middle or good on the wings. But on this occasion, you've got teams that are good in both. So I wonder if they'll just end up neutralizing each other.
Juventus came off a 3-1 win against Sassuolo, but this weekend, it's the big one. It feels like a long time since we've had a Derby d'Italia of this magnitude, both Juventus and Inter fighting for the same thing, but with Juventus not leading Serie A. It feels weird to say that after 9 consecutive Scudetti. So just how big is this game, Mina and Nikki?
Do you want to go first, or are you?
No, I wanted to react to whatever you were going to say.
I think this game is—it's a really big game. I think that because of how results have gone so far this year, Andrea Pirlo's bought himself a bit more leeway. I think that certainly drawing this game would be pretty okay for Juventus right now, even though it does potentially allow Milan to pull a little bit further ahead. I think there's real pressure on Inter. I already mentioned it, but I think that these are tough games, and taken in isolation, you could say, look, if you don't beat Roma, but you draw with them away from home, it's okay. If you don't beat Juventus, but maybe you draw with them, it's okay. But we've seen this a lot from Inter. We've seen this under different managers as well. We're sort of stuck in this narrative, one of the many Pazza Inter narratives, but that they start seasons well, you think, oh, maybe they finally got there. Maybe they finally found their secret sauce and they're going to mount a title challenge. They get to January, they throw away some points, often with a couple of goalkeeping performances against them where you think, oh, they got unlucky, but suddenly they've blown the whole month of January and the winter's getting away from them. And this is like a story that's on repeat. I think if you talk to Inter supporters, there's almost a psychosis around it. It's like, oh my God, this is going to happen again. So throw all of that into the pot with the fact that also it's Juve. It's the team that you're most sort of expecting to pull back and to make this big title surge. I think that a loss for Inter here would be really, really damaging. So it's a very big game for both clubs, for sure, because look, if Inter win, it does put another dent in that Juventus title challenge. But I think especially for Inter.
Good and bad news for Juventus in terms of the injuries. We saw both Paulo Dybala come off. We saw Weston McKennie get injured against Sassuolo. Dybala is going to miss around 15 to 20 games, so he will miss the Inter game and also the Super Cup final against Napoli later in January. But it seems like Weston McKennie and also Federico Chiesa, who got a knock, are going to be available for the Inter game. But to me, just previewing this game, it feels like which team is going to make the defensive mistake? I have no idea. On paper, you think, right, Juve and Inter are the two best defensive units, right? They have the most depth. They have the best center backs, I think, in the league. You'd probably put Napoli up there. But the way that Inter has been conceding makes absolutely no sense. Skriniar, De Vrij, Bastoni, That should be one of the best defenses in all of Europe. And then on the other side, Mina, and I wanted to talk to you about this because it makes absolutely no sense to me whatsoever how Juventus and especially Leo Bonucci have been this bad. And it's not even a partnership thing. It's not that, oh, it's Mery Demiral next to Bonucci. He's been bad with De Ligt next to him, with Chiellini next to him, with Demiral, with Danilo, whoever. Danilo's looked like one of Juve's best defenders. Who would have ever said that? It's crazy.
Well, we were laughing.
I said it. I put that in the team.
That is true. That is, Nikki did say it.
Do you remember when she picked him out? And I was like, what? It's been like five matches and he's already your favourite centre-back.
And I was right.
I have to say, well, he's been doing tremendously well for a player that I thought basically gave up after Portugal. Okay, so on the level of Bonucci, I have also been a little bit disappointed in Ronaldo. Now, here's my theory. My theory is that these two guys and Cristiano Ronaldo had come out and said that he really misses people booing him. He is the type of player who likes to feel the tension of a match. That's when he gives his absolute best. Obviously, big matches, Champions Leagues, you know, when things are on the line, you always see the best of Ronaldo. But I feel Bonucci's kind of the same. He needs to feel the certain tension of a match for him to do very well, which is why I think his best performance actually recently was against Milan, because that's a big game in his head. In his head, he needs to show you he's the very best. But in other matches, I don't know whether he just falls asleep or whether it's just a case of he's not feeling the vibe from the stadium. He's not feeling it at the moment. So I feel like his performances right now are like you say, Matteo, similar to the ones that we saw when he was in charge of the back line at Milan, you know, a club that at the time was really playing for nothing. Sorry. Anyway, but I think that now...
Hold on a second. Trying to get into the top four for Milan after how poor they had been. Surely something, excuse me, Mr. Leo Bonucci, that Serie A is not big enough for you, and that Juventus not leading the table and trying to get them back to the 10th consecutive Scudetto is not enough to motivate you. Forgive me, I'm sorry. It's not like you're getting paid or anything.
No, you're right. But at the end of the day, I do think these things make a difference. But you're absolutely right. Look, Zlatan is somebody who loves to be booed, but at the end of the day, he's still making the difference, and you should be making the difference. So I agree with you, absolutely. But I do think when you look at the way that things have been going for many top teams across the world and some certain players, they do love to feel the tension of a match, and that's when they do better. That shouldn't be the way, and I agree with you 1,000%, but this is the way that it's going. I don't know if it's definitely going to be about that's not defensively. I think they're both poor, despite the fact that Juventus have a rather good statistics when it comes to the back line. What I'm interested to see here is, I think, how Conte will approach this and how Pirlo will react to everything. Because if Vidal is playing, then there could be a potential of a red card going on here. He will feel the tension of this match quite strongly. Or he might actually give his best. I really don't know. But if he brings on Sensi, I think it's over for Juventus, frankly speaking, or I think it's going to be very scary for Juventus, because I think they don't know how to handle that kind of quality. And he really, for me, is, I've said it so many times, he is quality in every single way. But Juventus, in the way that they can counterattack now that Morata's not there, they have Chiesa, they have Kulusevski. If they try to be very vertical, if they try to play with quality, I think overall their style of play is very good and very unpredictable. And I'm not sure what that's going to do. But it's just, there's just one thing about Inter that I'd love for them to do, which is stretch out the back line and then allow insertions, but they don't do enough of that. So maybe this time they will.
Nikki, it feels to me like this game is probably going to be won or lost in the midfield. Talked about the defensive mistakes. Andrea Pirlo's Juve has already picked up 3 wins in 2021, but it's not the prettiest play. And I go back to those individual moments of brilliance, whether it be from Cristiano Ronaldo or Federico Chiesa, like what we saw in the Milan match. But in the midfield, I think is where they've struggled so much. And again, they've been trying to find the right solution for 2 to 3 years now. They haven't been able to get anyone that had the sort of impact of the best midfield unit of the past. And that's the thing that's been a bit frustrating with this Juve. And I think the thing that's kept them from winning the Champions League is that no matter what era of the last 9 years you look at, there's always been a weakness. In the beginning, it was the weakness up top. You had a great spine, great goalkeeper defense and midfield with like Marchisio and Pirlo and Vidal and Pogba. And now it's top heavy. Now you have all these great wingers and strikers, but the midfield isn't nearly at the level of the defense or the attack. And I was just looking at the Sassuolo game. And again, what is Arthur offering at the moment? Because he's coming in this swap for Miralem Pjanic, and people say, right, Arthur's finally going to be the one who's going to get us ticking. But you look at him, and yes, he's got a nice touch on the ball, but what exactly is the end product? And maybe it is a case that he's not fully fit, but most players aren't fully fit. This is the most congested calendar that we've ever had. There's COVID, so there's the randomness of maybe losing half your team from one match and then maybe a longer recovery for certain players because of COVID. But right now, Arthur doesn't seem to be the solution. Rabiot's fine, but I think he has a limitation. Bentancur is probably playing his worst season now at Juventus overall. I'm looking around and I'm saying, right, Weston McKennie is probably my first choice central midfielder. And who could have ever said that before the season?
No, I just wanted to make a point just quickly on Arthur, because I do think that what Arthur needs is a very solid midfield that he can slip in and then be able to be the guy who controls the tempo. But because there's so much chaos in the middle at the moment, he's not helped by what's going on. This is his first season. The tactics, you know, he is very used to sort of getting the ball, holding onto it and finding a good solution, whereas Pirlo wants to play very fast. So I think it's going to take time for him to make the impact that we want. Bentancur is another that needs a very stable midfield in order for him to shine. He's another that can also get a red card in this match because we know that he's very temperamental. So I think that when it comes to, if they all find a rhythm, they can be great. But otherwise, you're right. All individually on their own, they need so much more support than what they can give.
I actually just thought it was really damning what Mina said. I like Stefano Sensi, but saying that Juventus, with all of their resources, wouldn't have an answer for one player who, look, he's done some nice things, but he's someone who's played, what, like 12, 13 starts in Serie A for Inter? It's not that many starts he's got, even going through last season. So it's not an encouraging position if that's sort of where you assess the whole midfield to be. I feel like I can't give a complete judgment on Arthur at the moment. Honestly, I think that's someone who I saw him a little bit at Barcelona, but my focus is predominantly on Serie A and what I've seen in Serie A so far. Not a lot, but there's still time, and some players certainly take a lot longer than half a very chaotic odd season to adjust. I think that I agree totally with you, Matteo, and I am as surprised as you that the most important player in that midfield is Weston McKennie. And so his availability for this game, I think, is really important, especially given that Inter, as we've talked about, play such a physical game of football in midfield. I think Aaron Ramsey can be useful in this game as well. I think Ramsey's played some good games recently, but he is someone who tends to get... As we know, he tends to do his best work in the tre quarti, really, between midfield and attack. So he's not necessarily someone who's going to get really involved in the middle. I did want to ask one other question off the back of Mina's previous conversation. As players, are you the players who want to be booed or cheered?
If I got booed, I wouldn't be able to play at my very best. I know how I am. It's the same thing with a manager. I wouldn't want the tough love. I want someone to coddle me on the back, tell me everything's going to be all right. That's how you get the best out of me. I don't know about both of you, but I'm more of a softie in that way.
I'm totally the same. I wonder if Mina would like the booze. I don't know. I could be wrong.
Which one?
I think Mina would thrive with the booze. She thrives
with
the YouTube comments, with the Twitter comments.
But I
loves them all.
No, I do like the applause. It's just, yeah, I don't know. I think I would like the applause. Can I just say something on this match? Like, I feel like it's really annoying that I've seen three wins in a row for Juventus, but I'm not necessarily seeing Pirlo's style of play, which is why I feel like we can turn around and say it's not so beautiful. You've seen it in moments. I think Weston McKennie is almost like the prototype of actually playing Pirlo's football, you know, winning the ball back quickly and spreading it. But it annoys me, especially as we saw against Sassuolo, sometimes how they fall deep, how they're not always pressing from the front. I don't know whether it's the exhaustion of playing every 3 days. But Pirlo, if he plays Pirlo's way. Now, when I mention about Sensi destroying them, I think Sensi can destroy pretty much anyone at this moment in time. I am just a huge fan of his. I don't know whether that's so damning of Juventus. But what I'm worrying is if Juventus do play their style of play and actually show up and try to do what Pirlo is asking them to do, then I think that they are unstoppable going forward. I really think that in terms of actual an identity, theirs is very strong when they do that. The problem is that they don't stick to it. They fall apart. They start to panic sometimes. The mentality of their mentality, as well as Inter's mentality, is not where it should be. It's not where Milan's is, for example. It's not even where, you know, they don't have that absolute hunger at all times. Although we're seeing a little bit more from Juventus at the moment. But I do think that it would be very nice if I can see that sort of being absorbed a little more, of trying to press from the front and trying to win back the ball, because, you know, Inter can be defeated through vertical football, as we've seen how they've suffered against likes of Parma over the years, how they've suffered in the Champions League against that type of football as well. But they can also be defeated by quality in midfield, which Lazio do so well against them as well. So unfortunately, there's no midfield. But if the Chiesa can offer something, Kulusevski's vertical edge, Morata's playing now, it's interesting.
Just to pick up on Pirlo, because you mentioned three wins in 2021, and we still don't really have an identity, but I feel like we're starting to get little signs of this team maturing and trying to find its way. Pirlo started the beginning of the season with a back three, but now he's settled on three central midfielders, which was huge. Remember, they were getting overrun in the midfield when they only had two players in the center. There just wasn't enough cover. And the player that's impressed me the most, and I think it's also a testament to Pirlo, is Weston McKennie. He simplified things for McKennie. I think he's shown a real good footballing IQ going forward. No Juve fan really expected him to have this impact, making those forward runs. And then there's all these other players where it's like a revolving door. Aaron Ramsey, you can get him in glimpses in certain games. I remember when Ramsey joined Juventus, I reached out to an Arsenal scout and I just asked him, where do you think he would fit best? And he said, actually right behind the striker, because Aaron Ramsey's best quality is the timing of the runs, making that late arriving run, his positioning in the final third. And we have seen that, but I don't know if that's necessarily where Juve is at their best. I still want them to have that deep line playmaker, then the box-to-box midfielders, like what we saw in their golden days with Vidal and Pogba and Marquinhos, who could do all the work. And I think Ramsey can do that, but in my mind, there's better options.
I just want to pick up as well. Mina's talked a lot about mentality, and there's lots in that, but I think Juventus just aren't structurally that sound at the back. I think we are seeing gradually better football from them overall as a team. And I think that we've talked about in the last couple of podcasts, seeing some more of this Pirlo ball, or whatever we want to call it, like some of these ideas that he wanted to get.
Saying
like,
that? People are saying Pirlo ball?
Well, I just couldn't think yet of a better word for it. I'm just trying to sort of synopsize his idea of football. I think we talked about Federico Chiesa as being someone who, okay, he has a role for him and that role is working and that's great. But I don't know if the whole thing feels to me like a well-connected team yet. And I think that's what's happening quite a lot in the last few games, is the team will be playing well 1 minute and then some gaping flaw in the way they're set up is going to be exposed on the counter-attack. And look, we have talked a lot casting forward, and of course, it's a huge game. But just to reference quickly the game they played at the weekend against Sassuolo, they were a goal and a man up. And at the end of the game, you had Roberto De Zerbi, whose team came back to pull level and force Juventus to finally find a winner inside the last 10 minutes. De Zerbi wasn't saying, oh, we didn't quite hang on for that draw. And I mean, this is a testament to a manager who definitely does have ambition, by the way, talking about ambition in managers. De Zerbi was saying, on 10 men, I thought we could have won that game.
Yeah.
So
yeah. And he went for it, right? Let's just credit Roberto De Zerbi very quickly, because what Sassuolo did, going down a man and still maintaining their style, still sending people forward, still trying to play with a high line. I was seeing other people that follow the game closely saying, oh, if only Sassuolo had dropped back, then maybe they could have stolen a point. But that's not who Sassuolo are. Roberto De Zerbi will live and die by his methods. And that's like Pep Guardiola, who he aspires to be like. He will play his style of football no matter where he is. If he's at the Juventus Stadium or the Mapei or whoever the team is, Sassuolo will play their brand of football. They might concede four in a game, but then they also might score four in a game. And maybe their defensive weakness is usually overshadowed by how good they are going forward. So I have so much praise for the Zerbi. I thought they played bravely and they made it a game. And the scoreline, Nikki, it really doesn't reflect how good this game was in the balance. And let's not forget, by the way, that there was a potential red card on Leo Bonucci, right? Because of the pullback on Ciccio Caputo. Had that been 5 yards closer to the goal, that would have been an absolute red card.
It was a great game. It was a really entertaining game. I don't think Juventus stole anything. I think it was a really good game. The red card was a very clear red card. I could just see the words Pep Guardiola and I know how Mina feels about him. So I will definitely make room for that in a second. I know I've said it before in this podcast. I do really admire what De Zerbi's trying to do. His football is not perfect. There's some pretty big flaws in that team too. But what I really liked at the end of this game, out of all the things he said, actually was, look, we're trying to do something. We're trying to win these games. We're trying to get into Europe, because if we get into Europe, maybe we can keep together some of what we have here. He said, I'm having fun. I'm enjoying this football. I want to have fun as a manager. That's important to me. But I also have ambition. And for me to realize my ambitions, I need to get this team into Europe so more of these players stay around so we can do it again next season. And I think his mindset is really, really laudable. Again, for a club that has no business being in the top four or the top six even, really.
Well, you know what?
And why are they there? Sorry, Mina.
Mateo, it's my turn now. I'm sorry.
No, I'm asking you, why are they there? Because they play a certain brand of football. If they didn't play that football, if they played defensively,
but I agree with you.
I'm not.
Yeah, but the way that you're sounding, I get that it was a very good match, and I get that a 3-1 might be a little bit too harsh, but it's not like Juventus didn't have their chances. With better efficiency up front, then I think there would have been goals. And so then I don't think that, you know, like you say, Napoli are unlucky. Well, I think that on this occasion, several times Juventus were unlucky with their finishing as well. It's not like Sassuolo, you know, they played very good football, but it's also a lot of the reason why they were perhaps, you know, getting the goals they were was because Juventus wasn't converting the opportunities that they were creating too. That's not to take away from Sassuolo. Their game is very good. But I do agree with Nikki. It is about trying to keep the team together and building upon it, because I think this is the beginning of their journey. There are gaping holes in that team. There is so much that they need to do when it comes to balance. They are a team that can collapse or continue going, but it's all about their motivation. And what I love about De Zerbi is he really believes in his players. He makes them feel like they're so strong. But at the same time, I don't know whether he believes almost too much in them, that he takes away the pragmatic sort of style of a manager that is required at times. You can't always just go by what you believe in football and that comes above everything else. You have to understand the moments and you have to cater to those moments. And I think they did that at times, like against Napoli, but haven't been doing so recently. On just the topic of defense, I do think that when we're talking about the fact that they're conceding a lot of goals, you are talking about a team that is without Cuadrado, Alexandro, De Ligt. It's been coming back and forth. Every day there's a new player that's being churned out. They don't have a back line that has experienced much solidity this season when you compare it to the likes of, say, more often than not, we've seen sort of a solid back line from a lot of the Serie A teams. But missing De Ligt, Cuadrado and Alexandro is a lot. So asking this team to be so perfect when it comes to unison at the back, I think might be saying a lot. And considering all of that, I still think they have a good defense. Whether or not they are very good at opening, expanding and then compacting themselves very well, that's something Pirlo needs to work on. But I do think with more continuity defensively, I think they can get there.
Milan bounced back from their first Serie A defeat since March against Juventus by beating Torino in Serie A. They also beat Torino in the Coppa Italia after extra time and penalties. So two in a row for Milan against Torino, and it feels like everything's shaping up so nicely for them. They have all their direct rivals playing huge matches this weekend in Serie A, while Milan are playing a Cagliari side that has had inconsistent form. So my thoughts on Milan at the moment are they weathered the storm. They had all the injuries. They were missing key players in every single department, whether it be defense or midfield or the attack. But Zlatan Ibrahimovic is finally back. He played against Torino. Ismail Benacer is on his way back. And it seems like things are finally getting to be a really perfect situation for a team in Milan that has had the youngest average age squad in Serie A. But getting back Zlatan Ibrahimovic, who's only played a little bit more than a half dozen games this entire year, and also some of the other key components, I think is just going to slingshot them to stay in the top of the standings. I can't see a situation where Milan slip up now. I feel like they just had their big test, which was all the injuries, all the COVID and all this. And now they have all the other teams behind them playing some very tough matches, and I just can't see a situation in which Milan don't pick up 3 points and keep their lead at the top of the standings.
If I didn't know you better, I would think you were deliberately trying to jinx them. That's so confident.
Yeah,
that's so confident.
That's weird.
Finally, I get to be confident about this team. Like, did you see what they just went through the last 2 months? It's unbelievable that they were able to stay top.
I agree with that. I think Milan's consistency through this period has been crazy. And yeah, this kind of comes back to what we were saying earlier in the show. They did lose the big game in theory to Juventus, but if you keep winning all the rest of them, probably it'll be okay. There's a lot more games to go, Matteo, so I don't know if I can feel as certain as you do, but this is another opportunity, and it's got to feel good for Milan to have already made up sort of ground on Inter, even though you lost a game. And if Inter can throw a spoke in the Juventus wheels, or frankly, either way, you're making ground on one of them, and Milan can win again this weekend, I mean, you're certainly on course to be winter champions and in a strong position going forward. It's got to feel good for Stefano Pioli to have Zlatan back, even if he didn't immediately score in the Coppa Italia in midweek, as perhaps people might have ideally hoped.
It's interesting. Like I said, like you are all sort of gung-ho about it. Now, Milan have been winter champions on 17 occasions. They've gone on to win it 11 times. So more often than not, they do go on to win it, but I think it's tough. And I agree with Nikki in the sense that, you know, you can lose a big game here and there as long as you continue to win the rest of them. Having said that, they've done amazingly well in all the other big games as well. I guess it's really just Juventus, and they had obviously arrived there being really exhausted. But I'm always a little bit scared when teams are very good from the start of the season and whether or not that will catch up to them by the time that it hits March, April, and it becomes tough, because that's when, you know, it's becoming Europa and you're traveling, and then you're also playing in the league. So this is where you do need to get the, as many points as possible, make sure you stay at the top, which was what they're doing. But Torino is not really a great team to judge everything by. I'm glad that they managed to win this, but it is Marco Giampaolo's team. And I feel like it's really strange because it's not like they play bad football. I feel like Giampaolo is part of this sort of like he's in between a rock and a hard place, because he needs intelligent players for his tactics to be absorbed and played to the ideals that he has set for himself. But at the same time, he's not good enough of a man manager to get those big jobs and then speak clearly to the big players and get them to play that style of play. So he's always almost lumbered with regular players that don't necessarily absorb what it is that he's doing, whereas he wants to be dealing with, like, you know, a Luka Modric or a, you know, those types of Iniestas, but he doesn't know how to get those big jobs to have access to those players and then speak to them clearly. So I think as far as he's on board, it's always like Torino's just doesn't really know what they're doing, because like I said, they play good football, but first time in 9 matches they didn't score a goal, so that is something to say for them. But they're just a side that I don't know if they're going to get out of this relegation battle.
Mina, we always talk about top half of the table, and rightfully so, that's where most of the storylines are, but we have two historic sides right now that are in the bottom three, with both Torino and of course all of their storied history and what they did a long time ago. And then the other one is Parma. I just want to really quickly touch upon how I think yes. This would really hurt Serie A to have either of those two teams go down to Serie B. I know that both of them have been in much worse situations that they have now been in. Parma came up from Serie D after going into administration. Torino's actually bounced between the top two flights. But I feel like for Parma, I just want to touch on them. I did the commentary, Lazio against Parma, and the owner, Kyle Kraus, who's someone who's very passionate about the team and really wants to keep them in Serie A, but they've looked like a mess. They brought back Roberto D'Aversa, who I think is only going to be a good situation for them. But with Torino, with the way that they've played and how unlucky they've been, and the fact that they've actually played well in some games and not gotten the results, I'm really worried for them, because it feels like this team, more than any other team in Serie A, has a big mentality issue. And I go back to the time that Giampaolo spent at Milan, where it was a disaster. I mean, behind the scenes, the players had no idea what they were supposed to do. Apparently, the communication between Giampaolo and the players really was not good at all. And Giampaolo's not exactly a charismatic boss to begin with. So I'm seeing warning flags all over the place for Torino. And I'm actually really worried that they are going to go down to Serie B.
What is it that you said that made McKennie so good at Juventus? You said it's Pirlo going up to him and just simplifying everything for him. Now, when the chips are down and the side is suffering on a mental level, that's what Giampaolo needs to do. He needs to just, at this moment in time, just win. Just get their confidence back up and then slowly introduce his ideals. But I think that he inundates them with so much that, and when you are losing games one after the other, and they're not players that can just say, oh, I will switch this, I will switch it on and I'll win. You need to just simplify things, get a few games, get a few wins under your belt, and then we can slowly try to change the way that things are and try to beautify all of it. But this is my issue that I've always had with Giampaolo, is that he tries to aim too high and doesn't have the ability to, like you say, communicate. Now, again, in the beginning of the season, you and I were talking and I said I thought Torino was going to be relegated. And then I was like, no, actually, I don't, because they've got good players. And you were like, really? That's such a strong statement to make. But you're right. They do have good enough players to survive this. With Parma, you know, where I can blame Torino a lot for what's going on with Jump, I blame it on him a lot of the time. With Parma, it was the decision to go from being such an outrageously vertical side to hiring Liverani, who plays a completely different style of football, not really be having any of the players. I mean, we talked about it, Sarri not having the players to do this at Juventus. Parma don't have the kind of players that allow Liverani to really indulge in that style of football and to come together. Also, they just don't have time. They're trying to avoid relegation. I'm happy De Versa's back. I thought that they showed a lot Lazio, but I think their physical conditioning has stopped them from really trying to offer more of a challenge, because they were very good in the first half against Lazio for Parma. So I think if he manages to get them back on board on a level of a physical strength that they have shown before, they are going to be a team to be reckoned with. And I think they can avoid relegation. But I think what we can say is that when it comes to that relegation, you know, the fact that Benevento are doing so well, that Spezia are doing so well, it's interesting to see that the teams that are disappointing us are Torino, are Parma, are Cagliari, or Genoa against Balazzini. Again, a team that's growing.
I just popped into my head again the phrase from Giampaolo when he got the Milan job. So Antonio Conte had famously been asked about what he wanted from Inter, and he said, testa bassa e pedalare, which means heads down and pedal. Let's get on the bikes and start working. And Giampaolo came up with this great comeback, which is, you know, heads up and play football, which sounded great until his team didn't. And perhaps sort of what you're just saying there, Mina, and I would agree with, Torino have played some good football this season, but perhaps they need to get their heads down and pedal a little bit right now.
They should have said, testa bassa, mangia il panettone, Giampaolo. Let's see if you can handle that. Try to eat the panettone, which of course is the term for a manager that doesn't last to Christmas. They say you will not eat the panettone, a delicious traditional feast that Italians have all over the world on Christmas. Rapid fire time here on Serie Awesome, and let's just go through the other results in the Italian league. For Atalanta, Josip Iličić pulled what the kids would call a madness. Still no Papu, still no problem. Atalanta are fifth place now, only 2 points behind Juventus. Napoli left it late to beat Udinese, and Fiorentina got their first home win since October with an interesting quote from Cesare Prandelli, who was very honest, and he said, sometimes I think that I am a bit too emotionally involved with Fiorentina and feel like I'm in the stands cheering them on. Instead, I need to be clear-headed when making the decisions that are best for the team, which I found pretty funny from old Cesare, that he needs to tone it down a little bit, Cesare. Let's start with Papu Gomez, though, because his exclusion, and I was the first to say that I thought Atalanta, without Papu, it's not the Atalanta we know, but really they've been adding depth the last two seasons. They've been reinvesting that money that they've received from being in the Champions League on good young players. We know that Atalanta not only have one of the best youth sectors in Italy, but also one of the best scouting departments, that they seem to always be able to find a gem. So are they fine without Papu, or am I just looking at it a little bit too reactionary?
I was with you. I thought that you could replace any player on this team, but not Papu. And so far, they're doing more than just fine. Whether it lasts forever, we'll see. But I think, I don't know, you have, again, I think Gasperini has reproven all over again that tactically he is one of the smartest coaches in Serie A, and his ability to adapt a team and to come up with new solutions and to reinvent a really fairy tale success story with a new approach to the game is really out there. Is he still handling the other side of things, how he talks to players and about players best? The jury might be out on that. I didn't love him phrasing it this weekend as, oh, look, we needed to play in a different way and I needed to give more help. Specifically, he said, to Remo Freuler and Martin Giroud in central midfield. Well, Papu obviously caught wind of this because he posted on his Instagram stories with 12 videos, 12, which is quite a length to go to, of him helping the team out in deep-lying positions. So I think, as always with Gasperini, he's got one side of it down and the other side of it's a bit more ambiguous, but he's doing a good job in terms of winning games.
In terms of a man manager, I think there's question marks when it comes to Gasperini. A lot of that as well from what Castagna said at the time that we had commented on. But I think it's really hard for us to accurately judge how much of a miss Papu Gomez will be, because at the moment they are sort of regaining their strengths. They haven't played Champions League football. Now you can really see the beauty of their game when they're playing it at the highest physical condition. I think where you need Papu and Ljubicic are when you are facing a side like Liverpool, and he depended on them to manage to resolve the game. Sometimes that is the intellect of both of them. At the moment, you can depend on Ljubicic, but there will be games where you'll need a Papu as well. And especially when fixture lists are even more congested than now, and they are playing Champions League football, and it's all on the line, then you do need his smart wit to get you through. But maybe it will just be their ability to overcome as a team that will show you again that Gasperini always has an answer for everything.
We're going to end the show somewhere that I don't think anyone expected, and that's Mattia Destro. A quick run through of his career: an Inter youth player, partnered with Mario Balotelli. Jose Mourinho actually loved him, scored in the double digits with Siena as a youngster. Everyone went crazy about him, so he goes to Roma. He has 13 goals in about 1,400 minutes, so nearly a goal a game, and then he gets that serious injury. Hasn't been the same ever since. He's bounced around teams. He was basically a flop at Bologna, and then he joins Genoa, and he's sort of the forgotten man. You're thinking he's going to be the fourth choice striker for a team that's fighting salvation. But little did we know that Mattia Destro had his inner Luca Toni 2.0 ready to come out. So I guess that's the final question. Is Mattia Destro just another Italian striker who somehow reaches into the fountain of youth and becomes really prolific into his 30s? He's 29 now.
It's a little soon for me. It's 5 goals in 6 games, which is good.
But it's very good. It's a little Destro. That's how much he scored in the last 2 seasons.
It's a little soon for me to get on board the Mattia Destro bandwagon. I've been hurt before. I was on that bandwagon about 10 years ago. So
me too. We have bad memories. But to be honest, I mean, Ciro Immobile finished last season as top scorer in Europe, and I still wouldn't necessarily choose him as the main striker of the Italian national team. So I don't know. Like, Destro's great. Let's see if he can keep it up. But if there's anyone who needs a scorer, I bet you Napoli wish they had him right now.
There were some whispers that Mattia Destro, maybe if he continues at this rate, an inclusion into the Azzurri squad in Euro 2021. I'm not sure if I see that happening. I'm looking at Moise Kean, who's now at PSG.
Moise Kean.
You have Belotti and Immobile. And then
Chicho,
other than that,
Chicho, I think Caputo, those Chicho, and everyone else after that.
Yes, exactly. Yes, Caputo indeed. Wouldn't you love it if Piontek comes back to Genoa, Nikki?
Oh my God. Then we'd have to get Gab back on for at least one show.
Yeah.
And there's another great example. Ciccio Caputo plays his whole 20s in the Serie B. He comes to Serie A in his 30s, and suddenly he's like a 20 goal a season striker and one of our hipster favorite players. Thanks so much for joining us on Serie Awesome this week. We have a crazy weekend to get through. We've got the Derby della Capitale, we've got the Derby d'Italia. For myself, Matteo Bonetti, Mina Rizzucchi, Nikki Bandini, thanks for listening to Serie Awesome.